funny.
The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Hi, Mr. Jeskowitz.
7:10 p.m.
Thank you. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on August 18, 2016, faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and Express Times, posting in the district on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school, and finally faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mr. Jeskowitz, may we please have a roll call?
Mrs. Grant.
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Here.
Mrs. Hand.
Here.
Mrs. McHugh.
Here.
Mrs. Olasky.
Here.
Mr. Petuto.
Here.
Mrs. Ruddle-Goda.
Here.
Mr. Sturgis. Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Thank you. Mrs. Olasky, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Hold on, maybe Mrs. R., you'd like to?
Sure.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Hand, would you serve as the process guardian for this evening's meeting?
Yes.
Thank you. I just have a couple of quick statements this evening. First, I would like to thank all the staff for their preparation over the summer. School has started and everything went very seamlessly. The buses and the children's arrival, their classes were all ready and prepared. Teaching began very quickly and the children got home on the buses as well. So again, I would like to thank everybody for their hard work over the summer in preparation for our children and our students. And we're looking forward to working with you this year to make it another successful year here in Clinton Township. I would also, on behalf of the Board of Education, I would like to recognize the Foundation of Educational Excellence. They paid to have Eric LeGrand, a motivational speaker, come here to the school about a week and a half ago to speak with 7th and 8th graders here in this auditorium. I'll let Dr. Vellani, during her remarks, go into it in a little bit more detail. But it was just a wonderful message and multiple messages that he sent our children, and we were very lucky to have him. So again, I want to thank them. I also would like to put a plug in for our students who were so incredibly well behaved. You could have heard a pin drop in this auditorium for 1 hour. The questions that they asked Mr. LeGrand were amazing. It was almost as if they were 25, 30-year-old adults who understood his plight, what he had gone through, and the messages, the multiple messages that he was conveying to the children. So, in fact, even Mrs. LeGrand had said something to Ms. Hammond, our principal here, about how impressed she was with our students and that she had never seen such high quality questions come out of students in this age group before. So kudos to the families here for raising good kids. I'd also like to say to the board members, I put in front of you a piece of paper. As a reminder, we need to complete our board self-evaluation. I'd like to ask, amongst the other millions of things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis, if you can try to get that done by October 15th, and then we'll get our NJSBA rep in here to provide us with the results and set some goals. Also, for those board members that have not yet completed the state mandated training for board members, I also provided that to you in front of each of you who are still required to finish your training by the end of the year. So it's just a very gentle reminder to see if you folks can get that done between meetings and taking care of your children and working and everything else. So with that, I'd like to move on to the report of our superintendent, Dr. Vellani.
Good evening. Just a couple brief items and then I have a little more detail. Our enrollment report to date is 1,331 students. At this time, we do not have a suspension report. And Thank you. And we have two HIB reports, one at Round Valley and one at the middle school. It's hard to believe it's the end of September already because it feels like just yesterday when we were preparing to open the buildings. We had a just absolutely fantastic school opening this year with a number of different events that occurred during the first couple weeks of school. Our staff members came back on Monday, August 29th. They spent 2 days in professional development and getting to see each other and participating in activities that would help prepare them for the school year. On Wednesday, August 31st, we had visitation for parents and students in each of the buildings. The events were extremely well attended and everyone seemed excited to be back for the school year. Opening day was on September 1st. Although we had a little bit of rain in the morning, the day turned out well. And again, students were excited to be back in district. I had the opportunity over the course of the first 2 days of school on September 1st and 2nd to visit each of our four buildings. I stopped into each classroom to welcome back the teachers and to welcome the students as well. So it's really been a pleasure for me to get to know the students in district and have that opportunity to see them. Following the opening, we had almost two full weeks of back to school nights. We had events in each building. The back to school nights, again, were extremely well attended. I enjoyed the opportunity to meet with parents. I found it's amazing how many people I know who live in Clinton Township that I did not realize lived in Clinton Township before I came to work here. But it was a pleasure to meet the parents and speak to them about their children and learn a little bit more about why they're here and what they like so much about our township. Along with school openings, we had two big PTA events at the beginning of the school year. We had Ice Cream Social, which took place at Spruce Run School, and we also had the Pizza Party, which took place at Round Valley School. Again, both were well attended. On Thursday, September 15th, we mailed home park score reports to families. The parents and guardians received a letter from the district with the score report outlining how they can get the parent guide off of the state website and use that information to learn more about the score report. This year, we also sent to families of students who did not sit for the park a copy of a score report, generic, which showed what information they would get on their child had their child taken the assessment. So those should have already been received at home. Mrs. Grant talked about the assembly that took place with Eric LeGrand. Again, great job talking about it. It was extremely well received. The students were just so well behaved and so fantastic with their questions. His message definitely, I think, hit home for most of our students, and he was just a pleasure for everyone to see. Again, thank you to the Ed Foundation for supporting that endeavor as well. And then just for your information, upcoming on October 5th, we have a half day for students. We have professional development for staff in the afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm looking for a motion, please, for action item 17, SU-003.
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
Any questions for Dr. Verlani this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Vanderhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Ms. Olasky?
Yes.
Mr. Pituto?
Yes.
Mrs. Rudel-Goda?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis? And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Do you want to introduce? This evening, we have Mr. David Nash with us. He is going to present a HIB training for the Board of Education.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and have a chance to talk with you. It is one of those issues that I feel like I could provide updates on almost every day because the law seems to be constantly evolving in this area. So it's a real pleasure to have a chance to be here and to talk with you about this issue. All of you up on the board and our superintendent, you all have a copy of my PowerPoint presentation. And just a couple of other handouts that I'll reference during the presentation. One of those is a comparison chart that looks at proposed regulations that are potentially going to be adopted by the State Board of Education this December and go into effect in the middle of this school year, which is not ideal timing for new regulations to go into effect, but I will review those with you. And you also have a tool that could be very useful in conducting potential HIB investigations. So thank you for the chance to be here and to talk with you. And certainly as I walk through my presentation, please jump in with any questions that you have Certainly, if one of you is thinking of a question, probably others are as well. So as I get started, just a quick introduction. I currently serve as the director of the Legal One program. Our role is to provide school law training for teachers, counselors, administrators, board members, parents, everybody who's involved in our schools on the latest developments in school law, to make sure that everybody understands our legal requirements and areas where the law is evolving. So it's nice for me to have the chance to work with folks to understand the law before problems arise. Prior to serving in this capacity, I worked as legal counsel for the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association, and my job was representing school administrators if legal issues came up related to their employment. And prior to that, it feels like a lifetime ago, but I did spend 6 years as a member of a local school board, so I certainly appreciate the time, effort, and dedication that goes into serving on a board of education. It certainly is one of those jobs that put in more time than anyone can imagine. So thank you for your service as well. As every good attorney does, I'm going to start my presentation with a disclaimer. So, please don't take the information that we're talking about tonight as specific legal advice. I do want to give you the latest information on where our anti-bullying Bill of Rights is going, some new developments in the law. I want you to understand it. I want you to take this to help perhaps spur some discussion for the district moving forward. But obviously, any legal advice would have to come from your school board attorney. So we're going to cover in our short time a number of issues. I want to walk through briefly, just a reminder so we're all on the same page, the basics of New Jersey's anti-bullying Bill of Rights definition. New Jersey's definition is not necessarily the definition that we would think of intuitively when we think about what is bullying. It's not the same definition that other states have adopted. So it is important that we understand the specific components in New Jersey law before we talk about how the law is developing. So we will talk about that. We'll talk about some specific developments regarding what we mean by distinguishing characteristics. And that is a key part of New Jersey's definition. We'll talk about some developments in addressing conduct that occurs away from school grounds. One of the challenges in our law is that you certainly have to think through whether or not issues that happen outside of school are harassment, intimidation, or bullying that must be addressed by the school district. So we'll talk about the standards for that. There are claims that can come against adults. We'll talk about that issue as well. If a teacher, counselor, administrator is accused of bullying a student, that is covered by the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights and must be addressed. There are some emerging issues regarding athletics that we should be aware of. There is some new federal guidance that we'll touch on. Throughout all of this, there is case law, so I'll touch on just a few cases to understand some of where the law is going. There is an anti-bullying task force that was appointed by the governor. That has also played an important role as this law has been implemented. There are revised regulations that I believe when I was here last year, I addressed as well, and I may have addressed in a prior year. Those regulations have been considered for a number of years, and it looks like the State Board of Education is finally ready to act this December. So we are likely to have some significant changes in our rules. In the middle of the school year. Bless you. And there are some related statutes and other revised code provisions that impact on bullying, so I'll briefly touch on those as well. So I thought I'd start just with a little bit to remind us of New Jersey's definition. A key part of the New Jersey definition is that we have to look at whether the behavior in question whether it leads to substantial disruption or interference. So the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights was not meant to encompass and cover every student conflict that occurs. Kids in their natural development will have conflicts. That's a natural part of what happens with children. What we're looking at here is something that results in substantial disruption or interference with the operation of the school or the rights of individual students. And that's important to keep in mind. We also have to have something that a reasonable person should know will have the effect of harming a student. So a student who is engaging in behavior, if a reasonable student should know that that behavior is going to potentially be harmful to another student, or put that student in fear of harm, or place the student in fear of harm to his property, that is the kind of behavior we're looking at. Or if this is behavior that is going to be demeaning to a student or a group that the student is part of. So if you have discriminatory comments that are being made and that student is going to be demeaned and insulted because of those comments or being linked to a group, and I'll give some examples as we walk through the case law. Or if something is so severe, so egregious that it creates a hostile educational environment. So those are things we have to keep in mind when we're thinking about New Jersey's definition. And this is just another way to look at the same issues, just adding in the issue of actual or perceived characteristics. That's another very important part of New Jersey's definition, and we can never find something was bullying if we are not able to determine that there was an actual or perceived characteristic that was driving the behavior. So as we have seen, of course, in looking at how this law has been implemented, these things are not always neat and easy. You may have an allegation that involves a potential violation of our Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights, and it may also involve lots of other statutes. So if you have behavior that is motivated by race, ethnicity, gender, disability, you may have something that is both bullying under New Jersey law and a violation of state and federal discrimination law. And we have very strong protections built into state and federal law for a significant number of characteristics. And you can see in the PowerPoint all of the different characteristics that are specifically covered either under New Jersey law or federal law. And it is a very long list. In addition to those characteristics, our Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights also talks about any other actual or perceived characteristic. And that's where the law gets a little bit challenging because, understandably, I guess, but the legislature did decide that it couldn't think through every possible characteristic, every possible reason that a student might be bullied. So there was a need determined by the legislature to include that catch-all and to talk about any other actual or perceived characteristic. So I'll give you an example of a case, and there's lots of examples, but this is one that recently came into play. We had a student, I believe it was a high school student, made comments in front of other students that made that student feel bad, feel scared, feel insulted. And these were some of the comments. You're short, you're a loser, you're dumb, you're no good at basketball, you'll never make it to the NBA, you're gonna drop out of high school, you'll never get into college, and you're gonna become a drug dealer. These comments were made by one student to another. You know, unfortunately, these comments, these things do happen. These sorts of comments do get made. School district investigated the issue, determined that, in fact, this was a form of bullying by one student against another student. And one of the issues, one legal issue here is what were the distinguishing characteristics? So that long list I gave you, you didn't see any of those characteristics. You don't see height on that list of specifically enumerated characteristics, but it fits into the catch-all, other distinguishing characteristics. You don't see intelligence specifically listed on the list of protected characteristics, but it fits into other. And what's interesting is that the commissioner also said sports proficiency or lack thereof can be considered a distinguishing characteristic. You're lousy at basketball. You're the worst player on the team, and we're going to make fun of you because of it. That can actually be considered a distinguishing characteristic. And real world is, kids can be picked on for those kinds of reasons. They can be singled out and ostracized, insulted, demeaned for those kinds of reasons. So this was a case where a school district investigated, determined that this was bullying. The case was appealed, and the commissioner ultimately upheld the finding of the school district. The penalty in this case was 1/2 day of in-school suspension, a denial of 3 days of recess. So it was not an overly burdensome penalty, but obviously for the parents, a significant part of the concern is just the finding that this was a case of harassment, intimidation, or bullying. So in this particular case, the executive county superintendent also reviewed the allegations, issued a complaint investigation report, said the board followed all the required components in its investigation, implemented its policies appropriately, followed the code of conduct that it had in place. The suspension was within the range of responses allowed by the district, and the board's decision was not arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. And in the vast majority of cases, if there is an appeal that makes its way to the commissioner, that's what the commissioner is looking at in trying to decide whether or not to overturn a case. The commissioner is looking at whether your actions were arbitrary and capricious or unreasonable. It is extremely rare that the commissioner is going to overturn an action of a school district, although it has happened. And it has happened where investigations were not appropriately done, where students or staff members have not been given their due process rights. So we have seen some of those cases, and I'll point out an example along those lines as well. So that was an interesting case that showed how broadly we look at distinguishing characteristics. Here's another one, where we had a sixth grader make comments in the cafeteria. And this sixth grader decided to single out another student for being vegetarian. Student said, it's not good to not eat meat. You should eat meat because you'll be smarter, you'll have bigger brains, and then said, vegetarians are idiots. Kinds of comments, again, that could be seen by one sixth grader talking to another sixth grader, but it was considered a distinguishing characteristic. So vegetarianism, in this particular case, was the distinguishing characteristic for a determination of bullying. So again, that shows how broadly New Jersey is looking at the issue of distinguishing characteristic. That's not the full analysis, obviously. You do have to show substantial disruption or interference. You do have to show harm to a student, or fear of harm to the student or property. But as far as the characteristic goes, we do have this very broad view of how we're going to look at that issue. So I'll give you one other case where the district found there was not bullying. And this was a case where you had two students. They happened to be on the same team. They were on the same fencing team in a school district. And it was a case where apparently the two girls had been friends. There was a falling out. The relationship fell apart. They were no longer friends. And there was a fight over a piece of property that one said they had given to the other. The other didn't give it back. And things got a little bit tense between the two students over this property. There were some other personal issues that came with the fallout of this friendship. So does that happen? It happens. Sometimes kids are friends one day, they're not friends the next day. And to the extent that a school district does a bullying investigation and determines what's really going on here is a personality conflict between two kids, they're upset, their friendship has ended, that is not what we consider bullying behavior. So the key in doing these investigations is to try to get to the underlying motivation for the behavior. Not always an easy thing to do. Sometimes words are used by kids, insulting words are used, and it might seem at first blush that one student is trying to bully another student. But when the investigation is done, you talk to the kids who are involved, we talk to others who are witnesses and are aware of why the conflict occurred, you might find out that there are other motives at play, and this is really about a relationship that had fallen apart. And in this particular case, that's what the school district determined when they did their investigation. So the issues get more complicated when you're dealing with conduct away from school grounds. We do have precedent in New Jersey. It goes back over 45 years, a case called RR versus Shore Regional, where you had a student disciplined for threatening another student with a knife. The entire incident happened outside of school after both students had gone home. In that particular case, school district found out one had threatened another with a knife and decided that we can't have one of our kids fearful in school because another student was threatening him with a knife and decided to impose discipline. The parents of the child who was disciplined appealed that, challenged it, said the school district had no authority to do that. It happened outside of school. And ultimately, a superior court said, yes, the school district did have the authority to take that action because the behavior that happened outside of school was likely to cause substantial disruption in school. So for at least 45, 46 years, we have had precedent that says school districts do have the authority to address conduct away from school grounds. We have an interesting case from Flemington-Raritan that addresses conduct that occurred away from school grounds. And it really does set an interesting new precedent. This was a case where a student was allegedly bullied both at elementary level and as the student moved into higher level grades. Parents sued the school district, sued the sending district, sued the Flemington-Raritan Regional School District as well. And one of the issues at play was whether or not the parents of the alleged bullies potentially might share in any liability if the students engaged in bullying behavior. So interesting argument. School district said, we don't think we've done anything wrong. We acted to appropriately address all the issues that came up. But if there is any responsibility, if there were incidents that happened, to the extent that they happened outside of school, the parents potentially should share in that liability. And for the first time, really anywhere in the country that I've seen, we had a court say that yes, if a parent didn't do their job, if a parent was neglectful, did not work with the school district, and incidents happened outside of school, a court said for the first time, a parent may share some liability for bullying behavior that happens outside of school. In this particular case, the school district was not able to show that the parents were neglectful in any way. But even in that case, the school district was able to argue that the students themselves should have some personal liability for some of their actions that happened outside of school. So it's an interesting precedent that says that in some cases, parents and students, which obviously means the parents again, may share some liability for a behavior that is bullying if it happens outside of school and if the school district has done its part, has worked with the parents, has tried to give the parents strategies and ideas and ways to work with their child who may be engaging in issues of harassment, intimidation, or bullying. So throughout the process, it's critical that the school district always work with the parents as partners. And that came through in this case as well, that it's important that school districts do that, both for the victim and for the aggressor, on both sides of the equation. So another important piece I want to make sure we're all aware of, U.S. Department of Education has put out some guidance. Some recent, this particular memo that I want to start with is not so recent, 2010 memo. In this 2010 memo, before our current anti-bullying Bill of Rights was even put into place, U.S. Department of Education reminded school districts that if you have an alleged bullying incident, not only do you need to address it under your state bullying law, but if it does involve a protected class under federal discrimination law, you need to also involve your affirmative action officer. And that's an important point that we don't want to lose when we look at these issues. So for example, if there is an alleged bullying incident that involves race, that is also an affirmative action issue. If you have an alleged bullying issue that involves gender, that is also an affirmative action issue. And it's critical that the affirmative action officer be in a loop in that process. So there's many ways that can happen. The affirmative action officer should at least be aware that there are allegations of bullying, should have the opportunity for input into that process. If there is a finding that the bullying occurred and it was because of a protected class under federal discrimination law, the affirmative action officer should have the opportunity to weigh in. What do you think we should do about this? How can we remediate this moving forward? That person should be a meaningful part of the process. Where school districts have the luxury of having an affirmative action officer in every building, which is not required, you could choose to go even further and have the affirmative action officer more actively involved in the investigation with the anti-bullying specialist. But the key is to make sure they are part of that process. And a number of school districts are still not doing that in their procedures. Other guidance, more recent, from the U.S. Department of Education talks about students with disabilities. This was October 21, 2014 guidance, and it stresses that school districts make sure that if a student with a disability is the victim of bullying, that we do everything possible to look at that student's IEP, to look at the supports that are being provided for that student, And when necessary, we make adjustments to those supports. So the guidance talks about how we should convene the IEP team in those cases where a student with a disability is the victim of bullying. And that means the parent as well, as part of that IEP team, to determine whether something needs to change for that student. The only exception to the need to convene the IEP team would be if the principal and the case manager review the case and determine that there was no impact on the IEP and there is no need to convene that team. I would suggest that the general rule, and the vast majority of the time, we look to convene the entire team to make sure that there is no need to revise the IEP of that student. We don't want any students falling through the cracks. Student who's the victim of bullying, it could have been a very traumatic experience, and something different might need to happen for that student. The federal guidance did not talk about issues where the student with a disability is the aggressor. In many cases, it's also a good practice to convene the IEP team then as well. And certainly, if we have a student where we're considering discipline, and the student has already been suspended for 10 days that school year, now we are going to need to convene that team and conduct a manifestation determination to figure out whether the behavior is a manifestation of that student's disability. So on both sides, it's very important. Another important issue that has been in the news recently is the issue of transgender students. There has been a tremendous amount of national attention on the issue. The U.S. Department of Education issued guidance in May of this year that talked about Title IX including protections based on gender identity or expression for students. And from the U.S. Department of Education's point of view, clarifying what was existing law. And the U.S. Department of Ed sent out guidance saying that under federal law, a student who is transgender, born male, identifies as female, or vice versa, is entitled to the full protection of Title IX and is also entitled to access to locker rooms and restrooms based on the gender the student identifies with. That was a very controversial guidance that went out from the U.S. Department of Education. A number of states have challenged that guidance. It's an interesting legal question. But it really isn't very important for New Jersey because in addition to federal law, which arguably provides protection for a student based on gender identity or expression, we have New Jersey law which clearly provides that protection. So the New Jersey law against discrimination very specifically includes protections for students based on gender identity or expression and includes access to locker rooms or restrooms. I mention that in this presentation because there is a heightened risk that a student who is transgender or even more broadly, LGBT students, there is a heightened risk that those students could be victims of bullying. And we have seen that in the research, we have seen that nationally. We are, as a society, I think, making great strides in this area, and the vast majority of our kids are very accepting of all students, and we're not seeing this issue from the vast majority of our kids. But we do occasionally have issues. So certainly we do want to be sensitive to that. There is also an increased likelihood of suicidal ideation for students who are LGBT, and we certainly want to be sensitive to that issue as well and provide all the supports we can through counseling for any student who needs that help. So I just wanted to briefly mention that issue because it has been in the national spotlight and there is potentially an impact on bullying. So another important issue to talk about are bullying claims against adults, against teachers, administrators, even volunteers working in a school district. First, what the law doesn't cover. It doesn't cover adult versus adult. So anything that happens at tonight's presidential debate will not be covered by any anti-bullying Bill of Rights. The same would be true for state-level politicians who might be engaged in a debate. We have other laws that would deal with conflicts between adults. So if there was an issue involving two teachers in a school district, we have affirmative action laws, anti-discrimination laws, we have employee conduct expectations, but not the anti-bullying Bill of Rights. It also doesn't cover if we have a student who allegedly is being aggressive towards a teacher or an administrator. And that does happen at times, and there have been teachers who have thought that a student is attempting to bully that teacher. The Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights does not cover that issue, but you have a code of conduct that addresses that issue. What the law does cover is student versus student issues. One student allegedly bullies another, or issues where an adult allegedly bullies a student, if that adult is either a volunteer or an employee in that school district. And again, we also may have issues where the affirmative action officer needs to be involved as well. So I'm going to give you one adult issue that involves athletics, just to kind of transition to that issue as well. We had an interesting case involving football coaches who were accused of engaging in bullying. Apparently, these coaches had some students go through some extra conditioning work. There was one student who allegedly asked lots and lots of questions of his coach. And the coach allegedly became tired of all of that questioning and decided to put question marks all over the student's football jersey, because that student was the question man. And one issue here is whether or not the coach or coaches were bullying this student. And in that case, the distinguishing characteristic would be the student asked a lot of questions. School district did their investigation. There were other allegations as well. There was allegedly some criticism of a player's hair, student being picked on because of his hair, some other negative comments that may have been demeaning to students. So investigation occurred. District decided that this was a form of bullying. The coaches were suspended during the football season. Disciplinary letters were sent to the coaches. Those letters didn't mention HIV. The football coaches, which is their right, just as any other employee, if they're found to have engaged in bullying, decided to appeal that finding. Ultimately, the commissioner said that the employees had their due process rights violated, and the findings of HIV were expunged. So an important lesson from this case is that if employees are accused of bullying, just like if kids are accused of bullying, they also have due process rights. So we had a case here where the coaches were never given the opportunity to appear before the Board of Ed. Parents have the right, if they want to challenge a finding, to appear before the Board of Education. Employees have that same right. They were never given a written summary of the investigation of the charges. They were never given a written decision by the board explaining the rationale for the finding of HIV. So because of that, the commissioner said, we're going to rescind this finding. And the record was expunged for those coaches. So obviously talking about coaches, talking about athletics, it is important to mention the issue of hazing as bullying. We know from the high-profile case that happened in Sayreville a few years back, allegedly involving a football team, that hazing can be very dangerous, can be criminal in nature, and also can be a form of bullying. So we have had cases where hazing has become very physical, where kids have been assaulted, and obviously if those sorts of issues occur, it's critical that law enforcement be involved and that law enforcement take the lead in those investigations. But the Department of Education has also raised the bar for other types of issues. So the Department of Education sent out a memo in October of 2014 that said school districts have a legal obligation to supervise students at all times. At all times includes when kids are in the locker room. So it's critical that we make sure that students are supervised in the locker room. And that doesn't just apply to athletics, it applies to physical education classes as well. So making sure that we have that supervision is very important. On the issue of athletics, NJSIAA, the state governing body for interscholastic athletics, has also recognized how important our anti-bullying Bill of Rights is, and it's actually built in an exception, which is kind of a rare exception to one of its rules. So NJSIAA actually has a 30-day transfer rule that doesn't allow a student to participate in athletics at the varsity level for 30 days after a transfer. One exception to that is if the student was the victim of bullying. And if a school district does an investigation and determines that a student was the victim of bullying and that transferring a student to another school is in that student's interest, which very rarely happens, but on rare occasions has happened, NJSIAA would allow that student to participate in athletics. Another interesting case that recently came up involved the Bridgewater-Raritan School District in 2014. It was a middle school case. We had an allegation that an eighth grade boy had made comments that amounted to sexual harassment towards a seventh grade girl. School district did their investigation, determined that yes, this behavior did occur. Yes, it was sexual harassment, but no, we're not going to call it bullying because after all, they're in middle school and it really is adolescent sexual curiosity. Parents of the victim appealed that finding. Case made its way to the commissioner. The commissioner said, sexual harassment is a form of harassment, intimidation, or bullying, and said it was a mistake for the school district to conclude otherwise. I think the commissioner appropriately said that once you've reached that conclusion, that a student sexually harassed another student, there's really no way around saying that that's a form of HIV as well. And obviously, just because something is HIV doesn't mean that the penalty is expulsion. That almost never happens. The penalty, in many cases, is counseling and support, but there has to be a response in those cases. So we also have in New Jersey an anti-bullying task force. When the law was first put into effect, the governor, I think wisely, signed a task force, as part of the legislation, the creation of a task force. That task force was chaired by the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association's Executive Director, Pat Wright, included practitioners in the field, included experts on bullying issues. That task force did a tremendous amount of work over the last 4 years, developed an extensive set of recommendations. Some of the code proposals that are now being considered by the State Board of Education came from that task force. So I would urge all of you, if you want a deeper understanding of New Jersey law and how we have gotten to the point that we're at now, I would urge you to take a look at the final task force report that encapsulates the 4 years of work that this task force did. You'll see throughout that report and all the prior reports of the task force a very strong focus on school climate. Many times when we talk about bullying, we spend all of our time talking about investigations and talking about how we respond after the fact. What the task force appropriately found was that addressing school climate up front is critical to reducing bullying that happens in schools and creating a safe learning environment for all kids. So school climate is really an essential aspect of how we address bullying in our schools. And the task force report includes lots of recommendations to help school districts in strengthening their school climate. It also includes other recommendations for best practices. I did include in your folder a document labeled Appendix H, which is a threshold assessment checklist. So that document is something intended to help a school principal assess an allegation to determine whether or not this is something that is potentially a bullying issue. It is something that can be useful for an anti-bullying specialist in doing their investigation to make sure that every element of the bullying statute is addressed when we do our investigations. So I think it's something that I would encourage you to look seriously at. Consider adapting using the anti-bullying task force strongly endorsed the use of that threshold assessment checklist to help school districts with their investigations. There are lots of other issues included in the State Board of Education's regulations that are under consideration. So I did include in your packets a summary chart, a one-page document that goes through those issues. And I thought I would briefly review that with you. So it's a one-page chart that walks through issues related to our anti-bullying Bill of Rights. One of the areas where the code is likely going to be revised is the initiation of an HIV investigation. Current regulation says the principal initiates the investigation upon receipt of an allegation of bullying or when the principal has reason to believe bullying has occurred. The proposed regulation would permit you as a school board to adopt policy that allows the principal, in consultation with the anti-bullying specialist, to make an initial determination as to whether a reported incident is an act, or potentially an act, of HIB that needs to go through the full investigation by the anti-bullying specialist. So why would the task force recommend something along those lines? Why would the State Board of Education consider that? Because there are times where there is a fundamental misunderstanding by students, by staff members, by parents, of New Jersey's anti-bullying Bill of Rights. And there are times where, even if all of the allegations are true, what we have is a conflict between two students. And there are times where, given our limited resources, it's not the best use of those resources to do a full-fledged investigation under the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights for something that is clearly a code of conduct issue that could be much more quickly and effectively addressed under the code of conduct. So this proposed code, which is likely to be adopted in December, would allow you as a school board to adopt local policy permitting the principal and the anti-bullying specialist to engage in that consultation. We are also, as a state organization, the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association, urging the Department of Education to adopt a model policy on this issue that school districts can look to. So our hope is that that will be adopted. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that code proposal if anyone has any.
So when you're talking about these proposed regulations, who's deciding on the propositions? Is it the Department of Education?
It's the State Board of Education.
The State Board.
And the State Board is scheduled to adopt these potentially in December.
So is it possible to reach out to State Board members in support of some of these regulations?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yeah, there is still time for you to submit written comment in support of any proposal and expressing your views. So I would urge you to consider doing that. The second proposal on this list is a very important one. To the extent that you have students who are public school students who you are sending to an approved private school for students with disabilities, that approved private school has to follow rules that are very similar to the public school when they do their investigation. And we have seen approved private schools across the state who don't realize that, who aren't doing that. And that's a critical issue for the students because they're not getting the protection they deserve. It's an issue for the private school, and it's an issue for the public school districts who are sending kids to those private schools. So it's very important that we have discussions with any approved private school that we are sending kids to ensure that they've got their procedures in place. We are frankly concerned about a couple of specifics in the proposed code that is going to be adopted in this area. So one of the specifics we're concerned about is a proposal that if a student is going to an approved private school, but the alleged bullying act happens at home or outside of school, the school district, the sending school district, has to take the lead in doing the investigation. We don't think that's the best process. We think that it's best for the approved private school to take the lead in that investigation because that's who the student is comfortable with. That's who the students know. But it is there's an excellent chance that the code will be adopted requiring the sending school district to take the lead in those investigations, or if an alleged incident happens on the bus on the way to the approved private school. The sending school district would have to take the lead in that investigation as well. So lots of potential issues there. There's a code proposal that deals with the timeline for a parental appeal of a final decision. And we think it's a common sense proposal. Currently, a parent has the right to an appeal of any decision that a student engaged in bullying, either the parent of the alleged aggressor or victim, has the right to an appeal. This code proposal simply puts a 45-day time limit on the parent making that decision to file an appeal. So rather than having it open-ended and theoretically an appeal coming 2 or 3 or 4 years after the fact, this would place a reasonable time restriction on those appeals. Another proposal talks about changing the name of the school safety team to the school safety / climate team. Sounds minor, but the important thing here is that the state of New Jersey is stressing how important school climate is. So every school in the state of New Jersey has to have a school safety, now school safety / climate team, and every year that team has to develop a school climate plan. And you want to make sure that those plans are being developed for every school every year, and they're meaningfully looking at school climate and measuring how we can improve school climate. The revised code for the first time recognizes power imbalance as an important concept. not as strongly as we think it should, but at least recognizes that in many cases of bullying, there is a power imbalance. The research frankly tells us that in every case of bullying, there is a power imbalance. So we would have preferred stronger language on this issue, but at least it's a start. If there's a conflict of interest, this code addresses that issue, at least to some extent. So it says that if you have a teacher or another staff member accused of bullying, you cannot have an anti-bullying specialist who's in the same bargaining unit conduct that investigation. It doesn't say what happens if an administrator is accused of bullying, but obviously the anti-bullying specialist shouldn't be investigating their boss either. So that's kind of a common sense provision. As far as students with disabilities, the code talks about how we must consider a student's disability when we're deciding on what sort of a response we're going to have to a bullying issue. So if a student's behavior was a manifestation of their disability, suspension might not be a very effective response. You want to consider responses that are meaningful, that will actually make a difference for that student. There is some education reform legislation that the governor signed on September 6th that has some impact potentially on our anti-bullying Bill of Rights. One specific statute limits expulsions and suspensions for students in preschool through second grade. Obviously, it's hard for me to imagine a circumstance where we would talk about expelling a student in preschool through second grade. But this also requires early detection and prevention programs for behavioral issues. So the Department of Education is specifically mandating those be put in place for pre-K through 2. Another statute requires a review of the core curriculum standards to ensure guidance for substance abuse instruction is provided and that instruction is evidence-based. Sometimes we do have issues of harassment, intimidation, and bullying that also bring in other issues involving drug and alcohol use. So I just wanted you to be aware that we have that requirement to have evidence-based programs in place. Last one talks about establishing response to intervention initiative in the Department of Education to support and encourage school districts in implementing RTI framework. So the RTI framework is a way to address at-risk students, both students with disabilities and other students who do not have disabilities, to try to, in a proactive way, deal with that behavior so it does not continue and recur. So I would encourage you to take a look at that issue as well. One final piece of code that has recently been adopted I want you to be aware of requires professional development for bus drivers and aides. And it's very specific that the professional development that the school district has to ensure happens for bus drivers and aides addresses, among a number of issues, student management and discipline. So think about how difficult that issue is. You're driving a school bus and kids are misbehaving on that bus. It's not easy for the bus driver to know how to handle that issue. Training needs to be provided so appropriate protocols are followed when that happens. And obviously, one of the discipline issues that could come up is bullying that could potentially happen on a school bus. So bus drivers and aides must go through that training. Another issue that's specifically mentioned is the issue of student education records. There are times where a school district needs to provide a bus driver or an aide on that bus with some information regarding a student, some information that is confidential. It's important that we provide training for those bus drivers and aides so that they are not inappropriately sharing that information with anybody else. We have to work to protect student confidentiality. So if we're sharing that sort of information, professional development must be provided. So this is a new requirement. I would encourage you to make sure that that training is being provided for your bus drivers and aides. So just kind of to kind of sum up some things to think about in the presentation that we've gone through, you want to ensure that recent state and federal guidance is fully being implemented. I know your school district does an incredible job on these issues. I'm confident that it is, but it's just important for you to be aware of that guidance that we went through. You certainly want to provide ongoing training for staff, parents, volunteers, and students, including, as I said, bus drivers and aides. You want to look at your policies and procedures and some revisions that may be necessary in light of the proposed code that is about to be adopted by the State Board of Education, and also in light of some of the recent legislation that was signed by the governor. And as I said, the most important thing we can do is to always keep a strong focus on school climate. To the extent that we continue our efforts on school climate, we're going to have less and less bullying issues and a much stronger, safer environment for all students. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, and you know, any information that you might want, I'm happy to provide.
Any members of the board have any questions for Mr. Nash this evening?
Great. Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. So
thank you
all.
Much.
Thanks.
Thank you. I would like to make a motion for an action item 17-SU-004, and I will read that action item. Be it resolved that the Board of Education accepts the 2016 annual harassment, intimidation, and bullying presentation conducted by David Nash, Esquire of New Jersey Principals Supervisors Association and Foundation for Educational Administration. I'm looking for a second, please.
Second,
Melissa. Any questions once again for Mr. Nash? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Olowski?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Oh, she stepped away.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mrs. Rudelgoda?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderoff?
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Before we get to our public comment section, I would just like to move on to the report of the School Business Administrator, Mr. Justwitz.
I would like to thank my office staff for their hard work and dedication in processing the retro payments for the staff members. Second, I would like to also thank maintenance and custodial staff for their hard work and dedication in completing building repairs and the preparation for the opening day of school. Lastly, the date of the Board of Education's next regular scheduled meeting, scheduled for Monday, October 24th, 2016 at 7:30 p.m. in the auditorium of the Clinton Township Middle School. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, sir. I'm looking for a motion, please, for action item 17BA-006.
Motion.
Mr. Petuto, second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Hand. Any questions for Mr. Juskowitz this evening? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call?
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
I need to abstain.
Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mrs. Olowski?
Yes.
Mrs. Rudelgoda?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderoff?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to open the floor to our first public comment section on agenda items only. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw 9322 limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is only for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This too is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that a member of the public will make at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. We will gather all the questions asked at the podium and answer them again at the public comment section. To the extent any other action or research is warranted, it will be addressed by the board president or superintendent as appropriate. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board this evening on agenda items only, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes. Okay, seeing none, I'd like to then open the floor to our first recognition of the public. The same guidelines that I just spoke about for the public section on agenda items only are the same for this section as well. We will be limiting this public comment section on agenda items only to 30 minutes. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. Non-agenda items. Non-agenda items, my apologies.
Hold on. Should I start over? Oh, I can hear it now.
Oh, all right.
You need to be official. Okay. Should I start over? All right. Now I echo. Good evening, everybody. My name is Sandy Seidorf. I live in Clinton Township on Grace Drive. I am, I've been a resident of the Clinton Township for 28 years. I am currently the president of the North Hunter and Worry School Board. My colleague Roger Strait is here as well. I'd like to make sure everyone is aware that North Hunter and Worry's will be having a referendum at the November election. In it will include several infrastructure projects, including replacing windows at both North and Worry's High School. Also taking our media centers and making them interactive, collaborative media centers, air conditioning the last 22 classrooms at North, as well as some safety projects, including replacing the bleachers at the visitors' bleachers at North, as well as the tennis bleachers, replacing the visitor bleachers at Worry's, putting an ADA and a ramp at the home bleachers at Worry's, and infrastructure and replacement of the field house at North. The referendum is approximately $9 million. We do qualify for approximately $2.8 million in matching grants from the state. Our current referendum debt will be retired in March of next year. The good news is that this new referendum is coming at a time when interest rates are at an all-time low, and that the new referendum cost will be less than the current debt. So we really do encourage you to please speak to your constituents, especially folks that are in the middle school, elementary schools that will be coming and feeding the North Hunterdon High School, as well as any of your neighbors who currently are empty nesters, to get the word out that we really would like support for this referendum. If you look at our school system, we are one of the best schools in the country, as voted by Newsweek and others. It's important, we believe, to have safe facilities as well as state-of-the-art facilities for our students. Roger, did you want to add anything? We will be sending home a mailer to all households. We are also going to be having public meetings both at North Hunterdon and Worry's that will be scheduled and announced. And if anyone does have any questions, they could always reach out to either our new superintendent, Jeff Bender, at our district office, or myself, Roger Strait, Mark Strauss, and Lisa Aprovado, who are the four board members representing Clinton Township on our board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to address the board this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on to the reports of our committees. We'll start off with our Facilities and Finance Committee. Mr. John Petuto is the chair of that committee. Mr. Petuto, may we please have your committee's report, sir?
Sure. The Finance and Facilities Committee met last Monday. We actually had a meeting that was led by Mr. Tim Jaw that went over the Chromebook One-to-One initiative that the district is looking at. And we went over a number of other items that led to the 17 action items that appears on the agenda tonight. Those action items are between 17FF057 through 17FF073. They are made up of largely typical items, including the payment of bills, a number of travel requests, some graduate course approvals. You also have several action items related to the wastewater treatment project. We need to create a change order where we are increasing the budget for the 16-17 school year by $9,400 for that wastewater treatment project. It is basically the movement of funds from our capital reserve fund to pay off that amount. We also have action item 17FF066, which relates to our school choice program. This action item indicates that we are not increasing or bringing on any additional students for the next school year. We also have action item 17FF068, which is also an increase to the budget for the 16-17 school year in the amount of $267,000. This is also the movement of funds from our capital reserve account, and this is for the brick repointing project at several of our schools. With that, I'd like to put forward a motion for the approval of action items 17FF057 through 17FF073.
Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Any questions for Mr. Pituto this evening? Kevin?
I want to talk about 066 for a minute. We've talked about it before last year. We had a discussion about it last year. It's the school choice action item. I've always been a proponent of the school choice program, primarily because it's one of the only vehicles available to us to increase our state aid. When it started, we had applied for 105 slots, and I think our top revenue was between 1.2 and 1.4 million, and it's gone down as our participation in the program has gone down. And I don't know the exact count, but I think our head count's probably below 60 at this point in time.
44.
So, you know, going back 5 years, we were at 105, now it's at 44. We're not taking on new, so the program will dwindle until the kids age out. And I understand the rationale is that the state is either reducing funding to the program or has stopped funding the program. But I just wanted to get some clarity on that, because I can't find that when I look into it. I see that the state capped the size of the program at 5,000 students or $52 million. But does anybody know, are they reducing the payments to the districts below the cost per pupil that it started at?
They're phasing out the program is what they're doing. And they're, every time when our numbers were going lower, they were telling us there's a certain cutoff and you can't have any more students than that. So they are phasing this program out. I guess the other thing is they didn't want to, the initiative of the whole program was to have certain school districts and not all of them be involved in the whole program. Yeah. So with that being said, they don't have enough money to fund the program as it goes forward. Plus they've been changing the rules as they've been going along.
What I could read on it, it started out the first year was 1,000 students, then it quickly went to 5,000 because it's revenue. Everybody wants the 10,500 per student. And it's one of the only ways you can get more money from the state. But I can't see where that they've reduced the amount of funding per student.
They're not paying us the full cost per pupil.
So they've lowered
our full cost per pupil student. They're paying less.
Okay.
And every year they've been reducing that.
And I believe it's in the amount of about $1,000 per student.
It's about $1,000 per student.
So they did reduce it from 10,500 to 9,500? Right, roughly,
no, it's been roughly the same price over the last several years, which was about 13,000. But our cost per pupil has been higher than that, and as we're losing students, that cost goes up.
Okay, so I'm not sure. Are they lowering the amount they pay us, or are we benchmarking that against our cost per pupil?
They're paying us less.
They've been paying less.
Less. So the amount, the reimbursement's gone down.
It's not a reimbursement for all of the students. That, like as I said before, that they're just giving a one flat rate,
right.
One flat rate for each of those students, and they've been keeping it the same over the last 5 years.
Okay, so they haven't reduced it.
Well, if you keep it's been flat.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understand it.
Right, but as costs increase, they're not increasing.
I understand, but you know, there's two different answers.
Right.
One is they lowered the amount. One is they kept it fixed. So that's kind of what I wanted to know. But I would just say, as time goes forward, I don't know what will happen to that program, but from what I can tell, they haven't reduced the size of it. They've fixed the amount at 5,000 students. It's roughly $52 million because it was getting too expensive. But I would just say keep an eye on it because it's one of the only vehicles we have, and we did benefit probably to the tune of $6 or $7 million from that program over the past 5 years. So it sounds like, you know, it might change in direction, but I just wouldn't totally walk away from it. Just revisit it. See what happens in the years to come if it stays alive and what happens with the funding. But 13,500 per student, if your classrooms aren't full, is a pretty good opportunity.
Any other questions? No, seeing none. We have a roll call, please.
Mr. Pituto.
Yes.
Mrs. Hand.
I need to abstain on FF057, and I think that's it, and yes to the rest.
Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mrs. Orlovsky?
Yes.
Mrs. Ruhl-Gota?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes on all but 066, and no on 066.
Mrs. Vanderhoff?
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Moving on to our committee report for personnel negotiations. Ms. Vanderhoff is our committee chair. Ms. Vanderhoff, report of your committee, please.
Thank you. The personnel committee met one time since our last board meeting, and I'd like to call your attention to action items 17-PN-33 through 17-PN-69. There's 36 items on the agenda tonight. One is an approval for the use of paraprofessional staff during the 2016-17 school year. There are three resignations noted, one voluntary transfer within the Clinton Township Middle School, five updates to employment and or new hires for the 2016-17 school year. There's one new disability leave of absence being requested and one update to the end date for an existing leave of absence. There are six mentor assignments across the district being mentioned and five guiding teacher assignments across the district. There's one change of a building assignment for a speech therapist in the district. There are six action items related to movement across the salary guides for over several years for certificated staff members. There are also seven teachers that are asking for approval as ski club chaperones for CTMS. There are five coaches and or assistant coaches that have been approved for winter sports teams at CTMS. There are nine agenda items that relate to approval for various staff members across the district to act as chaperones or otherwise needed assistance at events that are coming out throughout the 2016-17 school year. There are two approvals being requested for board-related work for staff members. And finally, there are four job descriptions that have been put in place or updated. The guidance counselor job description, the assistant coordinator and counselor for staff, the occupational therapist, and the clerical aid nurse. With that, I would like to ask for a motion to approve action item 17-PN33 to action item 17-PN69.
Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Any questions for Ms. Vanderhoff this evening?
I had a question on action item 17-PN04. I see we're adding a half-time special educator. Does that include benefits?
Half-time.
So what is the, is it
0.7? Which one?
I'm on 40, but I just wanted to know what is the actual, how long do they actually have to work in order to get benefits?
It's 25 hours.
Yeah.
25 hours.
So is it 0.7?
0.7, yes.
0.7. Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions for Ms. Vanderhoff? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Vanderhoff?
Yes.
Mrs. Olasson?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Pituto?
Yes.
Mrs. Ruddle-Goda?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes to all but 6-7 and 6-8. I abstain on 6-7 and 6-8.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Our final committee report this evening is policy and curriculum. Ms. McLaughlin is the chair of this committee. Ms. McLaughlin, may we have your committee's report, please?
Yes. Earlier, Mr. Pituto said that his committee meeting was Monday night, but actually, John, our committee meeting was Monday night. I think yours was Tuesday
Sorry,
night.
You're right. My
because I think that Dr. Vani deserves an all-nighter award for our committee because we left the middle or the Round Valley School around 11 o'clock.
11:30.
Yeah, around. I said around.
Oh.
Let's be nice. It was a very lengthy meeting. You can't tell from the number of action items on this agenda, but we were there a very long time. Tonight we have six action items. We are going to be approving the use of the Danielson framework for the evaluation for teachers. We're going to be approving the multidimensional leadership performance rubric for the evaluation of administrators. We are going to be approving new social studies textbooks and online subscription for the eighth graders. I would like to thank Mrs. Hinkle for presenting to us. One of the reasons our committee went long is we had some presentations. So she thoroughly reviewed the textbook with us. It is a match for the current textbook being used in seventh grade. In addition, we are approving a contract with GoMath for their updated online software agreement, which is something that's necessary. And then we also have a number of field trips. We have two field trips with Artline for the sixth and eighth graders through Ms. Seeloff. We have an eighth grade enrichment trip to Gettysburg with Ms. Cormican. We have a science trip for fifth grade to the Da Vinci Science Center. The ski club will be participating at Shawnee Club on six dates. In the winter, the fourth grade is going to Liberty Science Center, and the third grade is going to Waterloo in Stanhope. And I just have one comment. We thoroughly review the field trips, and while every year we see a lot of science field trips, it's really refreshing to see a social studies field trip. So I'm very excited for third grade. With that being said, I would like to approve action item 17PC15 through action item 17PC20.
Looking for a second, please?
Second.
Any questions for Mrs. McLaughlin this evening? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call?
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mrs. McHugh?
Yes.
Mrs. Olasky?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mrs. Rudelgota?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Vanderoff?
Yes.
And Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Moving on to an ad hoc committee, the feasibility of closing a school. That committee has nothing to report this evening, so I'd like to move on to old business of the board. Do any board members have any old business they'd like to bring up this evening? No, seeing none, I'd like to then move on to new business of the board. Are there any new topics that board members would like to bring up this evening?
I have one, or actually two. The first one is I've been going to some of the town council meetings, and you can sign up on their website to get like email alerts for their meetings. And I was wondering if that's something that we could do to maybe get some of the people in the community that don't have kids in the school district, so they might not know when our meetings are. Mm-hmm. So like you can, when you go onto the town council website, you can just kind of put your information and then they send you an email alert when the meetings are. So I didn't know if that was something we could do. And then also on our school website, which I think looks really great, if you look on the side that has recent news, is there any way we could delete things that are over? They're still requesting pizza volunteers for the pizza party that was 2 weeks ago and letting you know when the ice cream social was, which was 3 weeks ago. So, you know, I just think that once the event is over, we could maybe just remove it to make it less buttery.
That's it. Thank you.
It's a technical
thing. Any other new business this evening? No? Seeing none, I'd like to open the floor to our second recognition of the public. This section is for members of the public to express themselves on school matters of community interest. We'll follow the same outline as detailed in the first public comment section on agenda items only. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone. State your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 15 minutes. No? Seeing none, Mr. Jeskowitz, can you please read the executive session statement, sir?
Whereas while the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meetings Act NJSA 10:4-6 et sec requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10:4-12B sets forth nine types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10:4-12B to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session. Whereas any collective bargaining agreement or the terms and conditions of which are proposed for inclusion in any collective bargaining agreement, including the negotiation of terms and conditions with employees or representatives of employees of the public body. Collective bargaining contract discussed is between the Clinton Township Board of Education and the Clinton Township Administration Association. And whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may become a party, any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer. The nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality is attorney-client privilege, personnel and negotiations. Whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 120 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for only the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, Mr. Juskowitz. Looking for a motion, please, to go into executive session.
Motion.
Rachel. A second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We're now in executive session. Nope, looking for a motion to reconvene?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Looking for a motion to adjourn the meeting, please?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting adjourned.
Good night, all.
Woohoo!